Welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebre, and Marielle Smith. Join us as we dive beyond the surface of our writing practice. Hi, Marielle.
Hey, Lou.
What are we talking about today?
We are talking about, because we're still talking about self-sabotage. There's a lot to say about the topic, apparently. Well, I mean, I'm really well-versed in self-sabotage, so yeah. So today we're talking about not enoughness and self-sabotaging yourself by taking too much on consistently.
So not enoughness, that means that you should be enough, but you're not.
It's that sense that it's never enough. Whatever you do, it's never enough. It's what perfectionists tend to suffer from. But I would say, I was going to say women in general, like I know a lot of women, but I actually know a couple of men who seem to be plagued by the same thing. That you don't know how to stop because it's never enough. And so that really, yeah.
It's about quality as well as quantity.
I think it can be, yes. Or I think maybe it is. Mm. So I think it's both. Yeah. It's not about, it's about not doing enough in terms of how much you're doing, but also about not doing it well enough. So it's about not knowing when to stop.
That does sound like a dangerous cycle to get into.
Yes, and that's why I wanted to talk about that today, because I am currently, I think like that is, this is sort of my pitfall. And I was just, I mean, I know I have this pattern, but it has become very obvious once again over the past couple of days that something needs to give. So I thought that was why it would be good to talk about it today, because I'm just really struggling with it right now. And I also wanted to talk about, like I said, I do think I know a lot of people who suffer from this. And I would say that this is also part of society that we're living in, like capitalism, especially combined with neoliberalism. It's all about productivity. It's all about pushing. It's all about, like, people pride themselves how much they get done despite being sick or despite having this hardship going on in their life.
Yeah.
Those are the stories that we celebrate.
And we only value those that are productive in those terms.
Yes, and I do think that. And the funny thing is, of course, is that with all my clients, we talk about this a lot.
Yeah.
But I talk the talk, but I don't necessarily walk the walk myself.
Yeah. At the moment.
But it's such a slippery slope for me, and I often don't catch myself until I'm already near the bottom or at the bottom, and I'm just overwhelmed and sort of realizing again that what am I doing to myself? Because this is the thing, like I'm doing it, like I am self-employed. So I do this to myself, like I make my own schedule.
I don't think it's as simple as that though. You know, because it's about not letting people down as well, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
It's not just about succeeding. It is about other people and not making excuses.
Yeah. And expectations that others have or might have, I think.
Or perhaps expectations you think they have.
That is definitely one of my biggest problems. And that's where most of my, if not all, my social anxiety is coming from, because I think people want or need something from me. So I don't even stop and think what I can give to them or what I want to give to them or what I could help them with. I just get stuck on the, they probably want something that I cannot or will not give them. So I just automatically go in defense mode.
Yeah.
So it's all about, it's very external looking instead of internal, sort of like sitting with myself. And that is this, I think, the same with this sort of workaholism and this not enoughness. You base that on what other people seem to be expecting or what other people tell you is the right way of doing things instead of taking a moment, which is, I always tell my clients to take a moment and figure out what feels best to them.
Yeah.
And I do that for myself as well. Like I did it at the beginning of this year when I ripped everything off my to-do list until the end of March. But in that opening up of my schedule, I was like, oh, so now maybe I can attend to this. Maybe I can attend to this. And before I knew it, I was speeding other stuff up.
You've done it again.
Yeah. So this is exactly why I wanted to talk, because I just realized that I'm doing it again.
So it's not enough to know that it's a pitfall. That's not enough.
No, because I think that is probably why I'm very frustrated with myself as well, is that I know it's a pattern. And every time I'm out of the pattern, I'm like, oh, I finally figured it out. And then you fall flat on your face again.
So it's ingrained. It's like an ingrained, you're trying to change something that's so ingrained in you for however many years. So of course you're going to slip back now and again.
Yeah. I think we forget that sometimes, that it probably takes as long to unlearn a pattern as it took to learn the pattern. And I've always, like, when I look at my earliest memories of like school, like I was always an overachiever. And I think it was fed by teachers always using me as the example. So there was always, like, I remember I have this sort of, I don't know if it's a trauma, but I have this memory of, do you know, I don't know what it's called in English, but this is one of the things we had to learn in kindergarten, that you have like this pin, you have like a carton and you have like this pin. So for example, you draw a house and then with this pin, you prick into the carton until you can like open the windows and the doors. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Do you remember that? It's like a big pin and you stab it in the paper.
No, but I know what you mean. So it's like cutting the doors out and the windows out. Yeah.
But it's a very slow process and it looks kind of messy because you have all these pinholes.
Yeah.
So I at one point realized that if you just put a pinprick in each corner, you can just drag the pin through, like over the lines, and then you have a really nicely cut out window without all those little pinholes on the corner, like on the sides.
Yeah.
And my teacher went mad because I was not doing it the way they were teaching it.
No, you were being cleverer.
Yes, but that was just, but the thing is, it's not about that. It's the whole, I was the last person they expected that of, that I was not going to do what I was told to do. And that really stuck with me, is that I sort of stepped out of line and I was not being the role model that I usually was.
They put you in a box.
So I think that probably, and I'm sure everyone has their own little, because this was like a 2-minute moment in my life, right? But I still remember it so clearly. Because it was such a, like, if she had just been mad at me for not doing, that's one thing. But this whole, that she was disappointed because it was me.
Yeah.
Like she'd expect that of any other of my classmates or kindergarten mates, but not me. Right. So I think that really stuck with me.
Yeah. But actually, you were being really clever.
I personally still think it looked much nicer.
Well, that's why you did it, isn't it? It wasn't to rebel. It was to make it a prettier picture.
Yes, I wasn't being like, oh, this is, I knew it was taking forever, but I just didn't like the look. So I just thought, what if I just like this?
Yeah. But she obviously didn't see it like that.
No, because I think I was stepping out of line. And like I said, like this whole sense of I needed to be someone people could look up to. That has been ingrained into me, at least from like, I don't have memories before that, but at least from kindergarten.
Did you rebel?
In secret, I think, when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
But not outward. Like, I don't think my mom knows all the shit I got up to. Right? Not my teachers neither. So it is, I did rebel, but not in the face of, like, the authority figures that I wanted to rebel against.
Yeah. It's interesting. I went to a meeting today about, and there's lots of issues in this family, but the teenage boy is very, you know, excluded from school, is kicking off, whereas the girl in the same environment was perfect at school.
You know what? So my brother was the one who did get caught. Right, like he was caught at one point faking my mom's signature, and he'd been using it for a long time to get out of classes.
Yeah.
So, and he got caught, which was an easy catch because the signatures did not look alike. My mom's signature is really, my mom at one point asked me to do it for something and I just can't do it. So I was like, why would you do that? That's, yeah, he was waiting to get caught. So he got what we call a square roster. So it means that he was in school from first period to eighth period for like 4 weeks straight. Right, that was his punishment. Yeah. So my brother was like the problem kid.
Yeah.
And they all knew, right? They knew about his problems. And I was more of the like bottling it up and not showing what was going on the inside. Yeah, so that girl was probably exactly the same.
Well, she's in the same environment and experiencing the same, you know, abuse and neglect, but her reaction is very different to the boy's reaction, and probably in some ways more damaging, like emotionally more damaging, maybe not as damaging to her academic attainment, but damaging in other ways. I'm not comparing your experience to that. It's the gender thing as well, the fact that the girl internalizes it and the boy.
I'm wondering, because is she the youngest? Is she younger or older?
She's younger.
Yeah, so I think it's both gender but also age. Like I saw that my brother, and my brother was older. So my brother was the one they were struggling with.
Yeah.
So I think if it's the other way around, that would be different. So I think it's both.
Yeah.
I think the gender just reinforces that because, of course, you know, girls are not supposed to act out, be aggressive.
No.
But I would say it's definitely a recipe for a great academic career. I don't think it's healthy, but it's one of the things that made me push really hard and achieve the best that I could.
But but now you're trapped in that cycle of feeling like you've always got to do more.
Yes, and it's really, really hard for me to change that. I'm realizing that now.
So what are the dangers of it?
I think that is very personal for the depend. Like, I mean, it depends on the individual and what you're suffering from exactly. But I think for me, like, you know, I've been dealing with anxiety a lot.
Yeah.
Again, like I can
see the link there. You know, not feeling good enough, and then that leading into anxiety. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also for me, what I've been wanting to do is take more time away from the things I need to do and to just be, like, more meditation and stuff like that, like things to calm my nervous system.
Yeah.
Because anxiety is like your nerves being like, I feel afraid a lot, like my nerves are like, you know. So that was the plan when I decided in January to drop everything. When I get like hit a whole, like, well, not everything, like not my client work, but all my personal stuff, my books and stuff. So because I wanted to have more time,
yeah,
in which I was not doing anything, so I could take care of myself, could go for longer walks on the beach, I could spend more time meditating, doing yoga and stuff like that. Because I thought, I need that to calm my nervous system and let my body know you don't have to be like on all the time and ready to react. Because I think my anxiety is based a lot on those things. Like, I'm always ready to respond.
So where are you at? Are you doing any of those things? Are you doing any meditation or yoga?
Well, I have my new morning practice now, which is, and I actually have an accountability partner for it. A friend of mine messaged me every morning. So in the morning, I wake up, I meditate, I write my gratitude, I meditate, I write in my gratitude journal, and then I do yoga.
That's good.
Yes, I know. But after that, I just go full on.
Okay.
And it's not... And these are all like short sessions, right? There's never a session where I'm like, I'm just going to do yoga for an hour, right? Like, it all has to fit in this sort of like an hour, the meditation, the yoga and the gratitude journaling.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So I still am not creating time for myself to just be able to just, you know, go to the beach and just sit there and just do nothing.
No, what you've done is you've turned meditation, yoga and relaxing stuff into a regimented routine that you've got to get in order to, yeah, I recognize that.
Do you now?
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't think that is necessary. That doesn't have to be a problem because this is how habits are created.
Yeah.
But I am realizing, so I've done the detoxing. And
back on crisps?
No, I have not had crisps yet. Because you claimed all of them.
Yeah, I said you could have the crisps back though. I'll just stick to the chocolate.
Oh, okay. Well, think about that. No, but the thing is that as I was doing the detox, like knowing that this is the time frame I'm doing the detox, it was better to create space and time for that. But now I'm like officially off the detox. I'm learning that there's a lot of frustration again because I'm still trying to eat healthier. So cook more like I used to have. It's very normal for me, especially when I'm stressed or I have lots of stuff to do, to eat like a very simple recurring meal, right? I just eat the same thing over and over again. So there's no variation at all. So of course I realized that's not good for me. So I want to do that better. So as I was on the detox, I could sort of tell myself, it's fine to take more time now to make food and to eat like a big salad for lunch, which I have to cut instead of just, you know, throwing some butter on a sandwich and stuff it in my mouth while I'm at my computer.
Yeah.
So now the detox is officially over. I get a lot of resentment towards those habits because they take up so much time.
Yeah.
So and that affects me more.
Can you pinpoint when things changed, or was it a gradual slide?
I think that for me, well, it's a combination. I think that was part of it, right? And also, I think because of the detox, I could lower people's expectations in my mind, because I was like, I have something that if people need something, I can just say, I'm not feeling up to it because I'm like doing this detox and I have these headaches, but I still have the same physical symptoms.
Yeah.
But now I feel like I don't have an excuse. But also, you know that I do a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to talk about today specifically. I do this Ask Me Anything every month in my Facebook group, the Accountable Wordsmiths.
Yeah.
People can literally, like, some people ask me, why do you love cats so much, right? But it can also be like about writing or editing or whatever, right? It can literally be anything. And somebody asked a question this weekend, because I posted it like on Sunday, I think. And then I take a few days to actually sit down and answer it. And she posted saying, how do you get, like, how do you manage? Like, you get so much done. Like, how do you do it? That's not a quote. Like, I can't remember exactly how she phrased it, but it was like that. Like, yeah. Oh my God, like, how do you do it all? Like, whoa. And I was like, so this person is impressed. But I had a really rough weekend in which I was like hitting wall after wall after wall. And it just kind of hit me. And this is not the first time I had that compliment, right? As a compliment, like, oh my God, you manage so many things. Like, it's like people are just blown, right? And I feel inspired by that. And I was like, my initial response was like, well, how do I do that? I tiptoe this line between, you know, like, am I being a workaholic and like on the cusp of burnout, or am I still being driven and ambitious?
Yeah.
Like, it's a very thin line. So it kind of hit me that, because I do a lot of things, that's very true. And I was thinking that some of these things might actually need to go.
Mm.
And this is another thing. So this is, so for me, this is a very layered thing. Is that there are some things, like I have things that I do that are like, that are investments of time. Like, for example, this podcast, we don't earn any money with it.
No. Right?
With the other podcast I do, we don't earn any money with it yet, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But there are also things I do that take up a lot of my time, but I do earn a little bit of money with it. But yeah. In my head, because I earn money with it, those things were never up for discussion.
Yeah.
And I think I've just realized, because for me, it's like, okay, if I need to give something up, I'm going to look at all the things that don't give me any return on investment in terms of financials, right?
Yeah. Or not obviously, anyway.
Yes, but for me, like doing this podcast, that's never out of the questions, because like this is therapy for us both, right? And we know from our audience that they get that same sense, right? That when they listen to us, it feels like a mini therapy session. That's a comment that we've had. So I like doing this, right?
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm like, okay, what are all the things I'm doing that are not making me money on the spot? And those are the things I want to push away instead of looking at the things that I enjoy doing or want to do because they fulfill a part of me. Like, it can be hard. Like my other podcast, it's really hard to do. It takes a lot of time, but I feel like I'm doing something that I need to be doing.
And it's the skills as well, isn't it, that you're building?
Yes, that too. Yes. Mm. So that is a certain investment, even though there is no financial return on investment yet. So there is this Paulo Coelho quote that is in one of my journals. And that's like, when you say yes to others, make sure you're not saying no to yourself.
Yeah.
But I'm always like, when I speak, like I said, like it is in one of the journals and there is a prompt attached to it. When I think about that, I always think about in this moment when somebody comes to me and asks me, I can make the decision yes or no. But this weekend kind of forced me to face the question that this is not just about saying yes to new things. Because like I've been doing the same thing. Like I'm the editor-in-chief of an academic journal. And I started that a long time ago, like 8 years ago, when I was just starting my business. So it wasn't my own field, right? It's gender studies. So it's my own field. I realized I could get a lot of experience from that. I realized it was going to look great on my resume, which didn't look that great yet because I literally just went to the Chamber of Commerce to register my company, right? So it just all came together. And even though almost nobody on the board gets money, like it's a volunteer thing, there is like a little volunteer fee.
Yeah.
But because I am like one of the two people who get some money, I never felt like I could say I can't do this anymore because it's taking up too much of my time. Because I felt like since I'm like one of the two people, and of the two people, I get more, it's not something that I can not do. And also, and this is where for me, scarcity mindset comes in. I've realized that I'm so hung up on that little bit of money, which is really a little bit of money for the amount of work that it takes.
Yeah.
That I'm like, that was like, for me, it's like, oh, wait, this is also about, do you keep saying yes to things that may have become such a part of your life that you actually don't wonder ever whether it's still serving you or not?
Yeah.
Because it's just part of who you are. It's part of what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just because I made that decision 8 years ago doesn't necessarily mean I still have to make that decision today. So that is something. And for me, that was sort of like my mind blown. Because I'd never thought about that. Because, you know, back in the day when I was just starting out, that little volunteer fee, like, I remember 1 month, I needed that money to pay the rent. So in my head, I'm like, this money has saved me. But that was like 1 month in my life, right? 1 month, 8 years, I really needed that money or else I would have been in trouble. And right now I'm like that, like whether I not earn that money doesn't really matter for what I can or cannot do with my life, because that's where my business is now. And it just strikes me how hard it is to still think, no, I should be grateful that I can do it. And who am I to say no to something because I feel like I'm worth more?
Yeah, there's so many layers to it.
It's lovely, isn't it?
What do you want your life to look like?
That's exactly it. Like, I don't want to live this. For me, right now, if I took that away, I would have exactly the life that I want.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I'm realizing that now. Because the thing is that I consistently find a balance. So this is like seasonal work because we have four issues. So yeah. It comes and goes.
Yeah.
But back in the day, it was something I could do in between jobs. But over the years, as things have changed, as companies have changed, like the publisher has changed, our system has changed. So it became more and more work.
Yeah.
And just recently, they completely overhauled their publishing system. And that actually means it's now twice the amount of work for me.
Yeah.
So it was already a thing that was like, you know, what am I gonna like? And now I'm like, when the period hits that I need to edit all the articles and send it to the publisher and all that kind of stuff, I really have to block that time, and I cannot accept paying clients. And so I think that for me is like a line.
Yeah, it's costing you more, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had clients that I needed to push back. And it was all, this is sort of like the voice in my head saying, see, it worked out. Because I happened to have clients that were fine with, you know, they had some space. But today I got, for example, I got an email from somebody which sounded like a really interesting project. And I had to say no, because it didn't fit in my deadline, because I know I'm going to get part of the journal back to do proofs. And that's the part that has become like twice the amount of time. So I'm like, I can't say yes to this project because I'm going to work another weekend and evenings.
So would you have earned more money if you'd have said yes to the project and binned the other job?
Well, one of the, because the editorial board or the members, like the ones leading that, they know this is a problem. And so I don't think, like, they know that this is twice. Like, they were the first to say, when I said this is the new system they're going to introduce, like, they were the first to say, that sounds like it's going to be double your work. And I said, yes, that's exactly what it sounds like. And one of them actually said, okay, then we need to figure out, because we have sponsors, right? So we need to figure out if there's more money for you. But the thing is, it's a voluntary fee. So I'm just going to give you numbers. Basically, with my own company, I make 4.5 times more.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money. And when they, because there's a limit to how much you can earn as a volunteer per year, the only shift they can make is that I now earn only 3.5 times more or something, right? Mm. So I'm like, even if I get that money, it's still not worth it.
Yeah.
Because, and the thing is, if I have time, it's fine. But right now I'm like, I'm really getting to this point that I need to choose.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also, like, I could be working on books. Like, I could be writing, and I can't, because not my nonfiction, because there's no headspace for it. There's no actual time for it, but there's also no headspace for it.
It feels like a really simple answer to this problem.
I know, right? Yeah. But I think this is why, for me, like, this whole, that you said yes then. Like, that doesn't mean I have to say yes and accept this new system.
Well, they changed the goalposts, didn't they?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not the journal who did that. So it's not their fault.
Yeah.
Right? That's another voice in my head. Like, it's more work for everybody, so I just need to suck it up.
Yeah. But
even if it was not, I think I should be allowed to say it no longer fits my life.
Yeah.
And I think this reflection that we need to be constantly looking at, okay, so I'm doing this thing. Does it still work for me? Does it still fit?
I'm quite impressed that you said no to more work, though, with the project. So you are saying no to work.
Well, the thing is, I said no in that I said, this is my first opening, and that wasn't fast enough.
Mm.
I don't like doing that. Like, I really don't like saying no, especially not, like, I'm fine saying no if the project is like, yeah, that's not really my thing anyway. But this sounded like really interesting. And I came recommended to somebody through somebody who's been recommending me a lot. Like I'm getting a lot of emails saying this person recommended you. So that for me is like, you know, I'd rather do work with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would that just solve all your problems?
No, I don't think so. I think it would be a start. Because that's my, I think my main problem is that as soon as there's space in my calendar, my brain wants to fill it with something useful.
So can't you
yes to the next thing?
Can't you see walking along the beach as useful?
I do that because in my head, I'm like, I just need to get this many steps in. So that's sort of like how I drag myself to the beach on days that I don't want to.
I see.
But I don't actually, then it's still like you said it before, it becomes part of this rigid system. Right. Then so walking is also sometimes a doing. Like, for example, yesterday I went for a walk. Like I was, my brain didn't process, and I had so much to do yesterday. My brain just didn't do it anymore. So I was like, I'm going down to the beach. The sun was out. I'm just going to, you know, grab some dry food for the cats, and I'm just going to do a walk. And I'm just, but just as I was starting my walk, I got into a conversation with this British couple, which is nice, right? That's like, oh, great. Like you have some, like I'm not the most social person, especially not since COVID. And it was a fun conversation, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What happened was, is that because I was recording the other podcast last night, at one point I just had to go. But then on the way back, I'm not like, oh, that was a nice conversation, because that's like doing nothing, right? Just talking to random strangers on the beach.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm like, I didn't get my steps in. So this was a waste of time.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think it's more the mindset.
Yeah, redefining what's valuable, I suppose.
Yeah.
I feel that. I do get where you're coming from there, that everything has to be valuable. Every bit of time is valuable, and so you've got to make good use of it.
Yeah. I think it's also like I even find it hard to just sit and not like read a book that's not like informative.
Yeah.
Or watch something that's not informative, right?
Mm.
And it's the same with, I'm very aware that I don't listen to as many writing podcasts as other people do.
Yeah.
And they just keep telling me, well, I do them when I do the dishes, and when I do, like when I'm driving the car, or when I'm doing. And I'm like, yeah, I also do that. But sometimes I just want to listen to music. Sometimes I don't want to listen to anything. But that makes me feel like, oh, I could have used this time as if I'm like, I'm doing the dishes, that is doing something. But it's like, I could have doubled down and also listened to this podcast episode about this thing. So I really like I said, I see it a lot, and it's the same loophole. Like it's the same loop for me. It's this constant push for being productive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have no solution. I was hoping you would slap me really hard and sort of shake me out of it. But
well, I kind of think that you have got solutions. I think it'll be a constant struggle, because it was set up for you when you were very young.
Don't you have the same though?
Yes, I do. I can waste time, and then I can hate myself for wasting time.
Yeah. I think that's what I had. Like when I do it, right?
Yeah.
Like when I had on the beach yesterday, I'm sort of like upset that people dare to talk to me. And I'm like, that is such a perspective. because I could have just enjoyed the fact that I just had this really random conversation, like about cats and life and stuff, with people that I've never met before.
Yeah. It's like I can't, if I go out and see neighbours, you know, just out onto the front to the bin. I went to move the van yesterday and the guy from the road was just passing. So he stopped to talk. But, and I'm too polite not to engage in conversation. But then afterwards, it's afterwards, I think, oh, you know, that was 15 minutes that I could have been doing something.
Yeah. And I think, and you know, on my really good days, I'm absolutely fine with it, right?
Mm.
But it's like on those days that I'm already struggling, I just get meaner and meaner.
Yeah.
To myself.
The stress, as stress builds up.
Yeah.
And it's like dieting, isn't it? The more you get annoyed with yourself, the more you eat. And on more chocolate you eat, if that would be me.
Well, there's still no chocolate in my house. It's very clean. it's I don't know if it's good or if it's sad. I don't know that. No, and you're right. Like, I do think that if we had this conversation on Saturday, I would have just be like, ah, ha, ha. And now I'm like, oh, it kind of hit me. Just a mindset shift that you can change things that were working for you then.
Yeah.
That's super okay. And it's also, and I think for me, the biggest fear is that it is a little bit of money, you know, that I'm earning. And it's like, and that is fear.
Yeah.
That's very fear-based as well. So I would definitely say that if you look at the things that you're taking on, what things do you keep doing that because they like spark joy, but because you feel you depend on them? And yeah, that could also be like, I can imagine, like I've been part of Facebook groups or chats, and I felt like I couldn't leave that situation, even though I didn't feel it was energetically healthy for me, because I kind of thought that not my career necessarily, but my context depended on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it can go for all of these things that you, when you look at your life and like, okay, what am I doing? What am I saying yes to? But also, what have I said yes to?
It's that being driven by fear as well.
Yeah.
And if you're making your choices based on that. Although, I mean, fear is a necessary part of survival, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And I think especially fear of rejection is, I think that has been, it's a long time ago that somebody said something about this, is that fear of rejection was really useful back in the day because you needed community to survive, literally survive. These days, of course, yes, we still need community to survive, but that's more of a mental thing. You know, without community, it's just, that's just not good for our mental space.
Yeah.
But we don't actually, like, it's fine if somebody rejects us, like nobody's going to die. But so that I can't remember who said it or where I heard it, but that person was, it's like our brains are still there.
Yeah, wired up to cooperate.
Yeah, so our society has evolved, but our brains are still like, rejection is the worst thing because that's like a life or death sentence.
Mm.
And that is in like, it's at least not in the Western society, like in other societies, that's a different story. But in Western society, that's simply not the case anymore.
I think too many people don't think about what they want. They kind of go, they set the life up with other people's expectations of what it should be like, you know, such as getting married and having children, or, you know, the automatic responses to things, that's without actually thinking about what they want or what suits them.
It's like, I don't know what school this is, but it's like, you know, when you're living your life, make sure you're not living somebody else's.
Yes. And what you're saying about the journal and what have you, there's a lot of prestige around that. And if you were wanting like an academic career,
yeah,
it would be a really good stepping stone to hang on to, and, you know, worth hanging on to. But if that's not what you're wanting.
Well, this is, I think, part of my fear is also that because it does look nice on my resume, which I don't think people know, read, right? I don't even think it's on my website, to be honest. So that's also something in my head, right? Like, it's great for my resume.
Yes.
I think it was back in 2014 when I was just starting. It was amazing. But I also have this fear that what if I lose clients? Like, because clients might find me through this. And then I'm like, I think I had two clients through the journal that I met through the journal that I worked for. So two in 8 years of career. And one of them was not a pleasant experience.
There you go.
So these are all the things I'm trying to tell myself in that face of fear, like, I cannot let go of this part of my life.
You're counteracting it with facts. The belief, it's that false belief, isn't it, that you get clients or potentially could get clients through that route. And then because you look at the facts, you go, maybe not.
And I think this is another thing that's really useful. Like, when you are thinking about, okay, are the things that I'm doing that I've said yes to back in the day, are they still serving me? Is that I had expectations when I said yes to doing this work. And when I really look back at what I expected or was hoping to get out of it, I don't think any of them have been met.
Yeah.
So that begs the question, why am I still doing it?
It does. Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
So is there an element of you're afraid to let people down?
Of course. Like, I'm not looking forward. I'm not looking forward to saying, because the thing is, I think I'm one of the few people who've been here for, like, I've seen people from the editorial board come and go, right?
Yeah.
So most people only know me. So I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, and I was like, the thing is, if I say I want to quit now, I mean, it's still going to take months, right? Before I'm actually sort of, because there's like, we're going to find a new person, et cetera, et cetera. And then it hit me that, I remembered that when I started, I was just thrown in, like the other person had already left.
Yeah.
I was just figuring it out. And like, I feel guilt because there's some stuff that's like ongoing. And then I really had to tell myself, the best thing I can do is just like write down the things that we're in the middle of. Explain that the best I can. That is more than what I got when I started this job.
I think the other thing is, whose responsibility is it?
That there's somebody else, or that.
Well, it's not your journal. It's not you're just working for them.
Yeah.
And have done a marvellous job, I'm sure, for many years. So your responsibility isn't to take on their role, or do you see what I mean? You've got a responsibility to a point, but it's only to a point.
Yeah, it's not like I'm just going to walk away and stop responding to my emails, right? That would never happen. But yes, it's I can say I'm leaving then. So find a replacement by then.
I used to have a supervision with a clinical psychologist, and she always brought it back to your role and your responsibility.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the issues that you have at work, all the issues that I did have at work at that time, she'd always ask about, but what's your role with this person, or what's your responsibility with this person? And you I suppose the important point is that you communicate that clearly.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So how far are you willing to go, and when do you want it to end? I don't think giving them the option of an open ending is a good idea. Because
that was what I was thinking. And then I'm like, they're not going to find anyone soon.
No, and you're going to feel resentful, and then the whole experience becomes negative. I think you give them some notice, but just be clear about it. Yeah. You know, that you're giving them a month's notice or whatever.
It's going to be a bit longer, but yeah.
Yeah. Whatever you decide, just be really clear.
Yeah. So I do, because now I've spoken about this, I think this is the way to go for me.
Yeah.
But like I said, like I'm sort of like, let's see what happens when that space opens up. Like, am I going to say yes to a new thing, or am I actually going to take the space and, start living the life, like start living my life how I want to live it?
Yeah. I think the other thing is, does it have to be one or the other?
Mm. Yeah, maybe it could be a bit of both.
Mm.
Yeah. But like, I do think like this is something that, like, but also this question, right? Like, what am I saying yes to? What have I been saying yes to? And does it still fit? I think this is something that we have to keep coming back to.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't been enjoying this work for a long time, but I wasn't aware of that.
No, because it was habit and everything else, wasn't it?
It was just that was what the job was like.
Yeah.
So you always have to ask yourself, like, why am I still doing this? Who am I doing it for? And does it still bring me what I want from it?
All good questions.
Yes. So this is for me a bit of a more general episode. It's not specifically about writing, but I do, like, I know a lot of writers who struggle with this.
It's important, though. It's important if you want to fit writing into your life.
Yeah, because that was for me, actually. I think I sort of started hitting a wall when I realized, because that's what I said, right? I'm like, okay, so I'm going to clear my schedule. But a lot of that is because I'm working on getting my books published on broader platforms.
Yes.
So that, like, bookshops can order them.
Yes.
Which is a whole process. So that was what I was pushing aside. And then that kind of hit me last week somewhere that I'm like, but that makes me feel very, that I'm not paying any attention to my own nonfiction work, because I'm still writing in the mornings on my fiction, but my nonfiction, it's sort of like static, right? It's not moving forward. That makes me very unhappy. And it doesn't have to move fast.
No, but you want to
be. I was not paying any attention to it.
Yeah.
Because the other stuff was taking so much of my time. And then I started looking and I was like, looking at the amount of hours that I've been spending on it this year alone on the journal. And I'm like, you know how many books I've got, I could have gotten on those wider platforms just in that time.
I think the other thing is those walks on the beach where you do, or where you sit doing nothing, gives you the space to think about these things.
Yeah.
Do you know, if you're just rushing from one task to another, you can't possibly think about these things.
No, and I think for a lot of people, like if you're like a workaholic, like for a lot of people, it is, you do stay busy so you don't have to stare life in the face and ask yourself what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. So it is also a coping mechanism. And I know that it's been like that for me as well, you know, to just run away from stuff. So I'm very well aware that this, and but this is why I want to incorporate it more, because I cannot hear myself think sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is not something I'm afraid of anymore. It's just, I'm now trying to prioritize it. I want to start prioritizing that time more.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But let's see how I get on.
Yes.
Let's see if I actually quit.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
To be continued.
Okay then. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you, and if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.